Hi, everyone. It's Glow. I found a clip on YouTube of the Vancouver Academy of Music's Junior Symphony with each musician playing at home during COVID. I'll open this episode with a minute of their performance. Everyone, welcome back to the show, Glow Says. And today I'm so excited to speak with Joseph Elworthy, who is the president and CEO of the Vancouver Academy of Music, which is considered a local icon or institution around here. So welcome to the show. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Gloria. Delighted to join you this morning.
Joseph himself has a very amazing sort of career. When I was looking through his write-up just online, everyone should take a look at it. I was blown away by how many accomplishments he's got. So I'm excited to untangle all of it, you know, to the extent that he wants to share with us. He himself is a professional cellist. Although he's in this administrative role, he continues to be very active in the music community. He has his own group. It's a trio, I believe.
Piano Trio, yeah.
Okay. And anyway, we'll just let him tell us the story. He's amazing. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
Okay. So the first thing we always start with is we want to know about our guests. We want to know who you are and just tell us some stuff about you, anything that's relevant to what you do now. And, you know, what led you to what you do now?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to share with you, Gloria. I would say that at heart, I'm a person that has many interests and passions. And I feel very privileged that my career pathway has allowed me to embrace those different passions. So specifically, yes, I am a highly trained musician, a cellist, and I love that I still have the instrument close at hand, that I still have avenues to perform, to express, to share with audiences. But I'm very bookish. I'm a nerd at heart. I love to read. I love to study. I love to analyze. So I was kind of one of those strange kids that, like, growing up, I'd like have a copy of, like, you know, the local like music magazine and then the Wall Street Journal under my other arm. So I don't know. It's eclectic taste, but I feel very, very fortunate that the positions that I hold allow me to explore these different areas of interest.
Okay, cool. You know, let's pull back a little bit more. How did you even start in music? I appreciate the fact that you said you're bookish, and I guess you were being bookish about music, but how did you even start there? Are your family musicians? Are your parents?
My family, I mean, they're incredibly musical, but they were not trained musicians per se. In many ways, my story, like many Canadians, is the classic immigrant story. I was born in Dublin, Ireland, and my parents moved here when I was very young. And it was it's a sort of typical kind of narrative that so many, especially people from Vancouver, have experienced. I mean, there's so few people that are actually like born in Vancouver, but it's coming here, this land of great promise, and, you know, making a fresh start of it. And part of, you know, my parents' outlook was, you know, what opportunities can we give to our son that maybe we didn't have the benefit of experiencing? And so they had great appreciation and love of classical music. And it just so happened that I was born the year that the great Spanish cellist Pablo Casals had died. So it was kind of like in the back of my dad's mind in particular, it was like, oh, I think the cello would be such a great instrument. And then kind of serendipity takes hold. They heard about this new school at Kitts Point, at Vanier Park, Vancouver Academy of Music. Oh, that sounds kind of intimidating. That sounds a bit lofty. Let's see what that's about. So at that time, there was a huge waiting list for a piano, for violin, but cello, hey, you can start immediately. So, you know, everything just kind of like converged and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah. And did you take to it right away, like a duck to water? Did you pick up the cello and just start playing like concertos?
You know, there's some pretty embarrassing stories of the early days. I started Suzuki cello, which was, you know, many, many kids, that was their sort of entry point in music. And the Suzuki method, which is so wonderful, it works on developing your ear first and your kind of, you know, physical relationship to the instrument through a cereal box before you actually get the instrument itself. And so various ear training tests that I didn't realize they were tests, but I was horrendous at them. I don't remember this, but my mom recalls it was not until like the Smarties were brought out that suddenly it was identified that, oh, actually, he can hear. That's good news. And apart from what we've experienced thus far, he actually has a perfect pitch. So I owe it all to Smarties. Like, what else can I say?
I love that. I was going to ask you if you had perfect pitch, but with Smarties, that drew that out. Great. How awfully Canadian of you.
I know. And still to this day, it's like Smarties seems to be the tipping point for me. So
that's awesome. I like that. So they discovered that you had perfect pitch. So, and obviously there was some talent there. And I guess you liked the feel of the cello when you were.
Yeah, I did. I would like to sort of qualify, though, that, you know, I think there's a bit of a misnomer that if you don't have perfect pitch, that, you know, you're really not, you're sort of limited what you can do musically, which is categorically false. There are so many famous musicians and composers who, you know, perfect pitch is, it's just a sort of one-off. It's almost like a party trick, you know? It's like, oh, you hear that? You hear the vacuum next door? Oh, that's a B sharp. So it's not by any means like a prerequisite. But I recalled, you know, when I was told that I was going to play the cello, I didn't even know what it was, but the idea of playing music was something that excited me greatly. And then when I came into the academy as a, you know, a young lad, and I just thought this was so amazing that this huge building, intimidating building that I would sort of assume housed like top government secrets, was actually a place of creativity. And I was so taken by that.
I've always been taken by that contrast when I think about the concrete block, you know, sitting there with a great view of the city. But it's a music building. I'm sure it had something to do with the architecture of the time or something.
Well, yeah, it's funny, actually. So I encourage any listeners that are in Vancouver to, you know, if you're not familiar with our location, drive to Vanier Park, which is basically right across from the Space Center, you know, beside Bard on the Beach. And you will see what is the quintessential brutalist architecture. And that is our building. And it's interesting because fans of that sort of minimalist style, they adore the building. And then there's perhaps the majority that just don't get it. And they're sort of like, well, what's this all about? But I love the fact that what you see on the exterior is not at all what happens inside. So I kind of enjoy that dichotomy.
Yeah, no, it's cool for sure. So you started, were you among the first students at Vancouver Academy of Music, your own journey?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, to put a year on it, it was 1977. And so it was the, you know, first sort of intake. The school was founded officially in 1969. And it's sort of functioning like many, you know, startup music schools, like initially in church basements and school basements. And, you know, to the credit of, you know, especially the mayor at the time, Art Phillips, really recognized that there was a need for like a formal music conservatory in this very new city of Vancouver. And so a group of visionaries, it's quite interesting, actually. group of, it was kind of the original board at the time for the Vancouver Academy of Music was kind of the who's who of Vancouver socialites. So you had like John Kerner's mother was chair of the board. You had the Kerners were there. Some, you know, really sort of iconic Vancouver families. And they were really behind this. And they admittedly, they had a lot of political connections with the, at that time, it was the federal liberal government under Pierre Elliott Trudeau. And there's all kinds of funny stories about how the board members were pressing Pierre Elliott Trudeau for more funds to retrofit the building. And, you know, even anecdotal stories of Trudeau slamming the phone down saying, if I get one more phone call about that music school in Vancouver, I mean,
that's awesome. Yeah, great. And did it start when it started? Was it fully every instrument to be taught was available, or was it sort of piano and violin, cello?
Yeah, good yeah. Question. I mean, it sort of initial mandate was the full spectrum of all musical instruments that would consist of an orchestral, you know, full orchestra. But the focus was definitely on, at that time, you know, the kind of this new sensation, international sensation of the Suzuki methodology, which was kind of like, that was probably its, you know, the apex of its popularity. It was almost cultish that, you know, it's like Suzuki was a way of life. It was a way of familial harmony, you know, the relationship between the student, the teacher, and the parent working as one. So it was all very, you know, the sort of ideals coming out of the 60s and what have you. So quite
okay.
Beautiful.
How did you get to enjoy exploring music on your own terms? Was it a teacher for you, or was it just having a school to be attached to, for example?
You know, it was a school. Of course, I had great teachers that inspired me and encouraged me to work hard. But I just love the fact that when I came into this school outside of my school, that it was so different and that I could be maybe my truer self versus the day-to-day, you know, experiences that kids go through, you know, in school, where they sometimes have to protect themselves and they have to sort of be perhaps a bit guarded in terms of their passions or their interests and sort of oscillates. But I felt like I come to this special place, this school that's sort of just blessed to be situated in a park, like right on the waterfront. And it just kind of inspires you to just to be yourself and to just enjoy that, the sort of camaraderie. And essentially, I mean, music is a shared experience. And so, you know, that culmination of the art form and just the delivery platform, it made the Academy something that was really special for me since I was a little boy.
And being a cellist, I guess that lent itself to shared experiences growing up, like being part of an orchestra or a symphony. Is that how it started for you?
Yes. Well, I mean, everyone knows that cellists are the most giving, generous people. It's just the nature, you know, the nature of not getting the melody like the violins always have, or, you know.
They're the diva of the orchestra.
Yeah, right? We are the, you know, the rolling up the sleeves types in the orchestra. Just we get it, dependable. We get it done. So I joke, but there is an undeniable trend when you look at people like myself that have assumed positions of leadership in music organizations, and there's so many of them that are cellists. I think there's more to it than just coincidence.
Good. Okay, so you you went through the Vancouver Academy, and when did you decide that you wanted to do it, you know, as a career or profession?
You know, I don't think there was ever a point where I was like, okay, like epiphany moment, this is what it's going to be. I was lucky through just my love of academics and being kind of scholarly that combination with my musical gifts allowed me to go to Yale, which was an amazing experience. And in fact, ironically, you know, going to New Haven probably initially pushed me further away from the cello and pushed me, like I arrived in New Haven, it was like the election, you know, the George W. Bush election with Clinton. And I was just caught up, like, you know, they were both Yale alum. And I just thought, wow, as a West Coast boy from Vancouver, suddenly like in the heart of the East Coast, and like introduction to college life was this like very tumultuous election and all the issues that were going on. I was really mesmerized by this. So I would probably, you know, at that time I loaded up on like philosophy and economics courses. And I was, if you looked at my course load, I probably was more on the trajectory for going into something more academic, like maybe law, what have you. But ultimately, at those moments of that were most meaningful to me, it always involved music, and I couldn't deny that. So after Yale, I went to Juilliard. So I think that was definitely the moment where I was like, okay, I'm going to the ultimate finishing school for musicians. And that was a bit of a shock and an experience unto itself as well.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, I'm glad that, you know, from a human standpoint, you followed your gifts, right? I mean, even though music is accessible and can be acquired by anybody that wants to actually and has, you know, is interested in it, I love when people find their gifts or their talents and go with it. It's kind of like, because I talk to a lot of entrepreneurs, I always say it's like the crumbs on the trail to lead your business. But yeah.
Well, you know, it's, you've raised such a strong point. And I think musicians, in order to be successful, you have to have this like strong entrepreneurial instinct and spirit, because it is just such a, you know, a sink or swim industry. And it's always been that. I mean, you know, people have been forecasting the death of classical music for decades. It's like the most like tired narrative you could possibly imagine. But it's here. It has longevity. It has staying power. And, you know, you look, I think there's sort of a misconception that, oh, you know, I'll go into a safe profession. I'll get my MBA. I'll go into, you know, medicine or into law, and the world will be my oyster. But as anyone will tell you, it's we live fortunately in a world with incredibly talented people. And it's the best part of competition. And I think music is something that, it's built inherent kind of competitiveness and having to prove yourself every time you perform.
Yep, I totally agree with that. And that will serve you well in whatever you end up doing, won't it?
Well, yeah, and, you know, it's, I feel like, you know, so many schools have been, universities have been really smart in recognizing that, hey, look at our intake. How many of them, not just, you know, sort of dabble in music, but really excel at it. And they have crafted their degree offerings so that it doesn't have to be one or the other, but that you can, you know, you can look at sort of dual degree programs, or even if you decide to declare a major that has nothing to do with music, there's just such a rich pool of talent that can keep the most avid musician stimulated. So I think it's wonderful. It's great to see that development.
Yeah. No, great. So that, now that's probably from your hat as an executive director or president of a music school a bit. Let's get back a little bit to what brought you back here. I mean, you went to Yale, you went to Juilliard. You would think the next steps would be New York City or London, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Your parents came from Dublin.
Yeah. Oh, actually, interestingly, I did spend almost a year playing in the National Orchestra in Ireland, in Dublin. That was kind of an opportunity to reconnect with my roots. And it was interesting, you know, just briefly, I mean, my parents left during the Troubles in Ireland when it was Civil War. And I went back in the late 90s when it was the so-called Celtic Tiger, when it was like the most booming economy in certainly in Europe. So it was just interesting to see like a country go from third to first world, like within the space of years. But to your question, you know, after I graduated from Juilliard, I was in New York City for a number of years. That was my base. That's, you know, being on the East Coast for concerts was at the time really essential. It was easy for me to access the places I needed to be, to network, to develop my career. And it also was such a stimulating city that I just felt like I needed to sort of extract everything I could from that experience. At the same time, I mean, you know, when you're blessed to grow up in a city like Vancouver, it never leaves you. And you all have this, at least I always had this sort of nagging thought of like, oh, but what would it be like to go back? This, you know, go back to Lotus Land and see how things could be. And so that was definitely in the back of my mind. And I also felt like my upbringing here in Vancouver was just, it was just such a great place to be raised. And I wanted to impart what I had learned to future generation of musicians. So it was something, it was a kind of combination of things where there was an opening for me to come back to the academy in the cello faculty department. And I also won a position in the Vancouver Symphony Orchestra. So it was a kind of a combination package because Vancouver is an expensive city to live in case you haven't heard. As a musician, you need a combination package. So it was just the perfect kind of coupling. And so I came back, you know, the sort of sad part of that tale is that I left New York City just about 5 weeks before 9/11. And it was so heartbreaking to be back in Vancouver and to be enjoying all the splendors of this wonderful city. And then to see my former adopted city, you know, literally in ruins. And that was devastating. And it's interesting. I mean, just with our present pandemic situation, that same level of desperation, it's only comparable in my lifetime to 9/11. And I look at the exodus of talented people from Manhattan, and they've just fled. They're in San Jose or in Florida, or, you know, it's just this diaspora.
That's interesting to compare that. I understand being of the same vintage as you. I totally understand. Okay, so you had opportunities to bring you back to Vancouver. It sounds like a bit of this Japanese philosophy ikigai, where everything just kind of all comes together for you. So that's great. You took that up, came back here. And what was the pivot to turn you from, you know, being just a musician and cellist and attending the symphony, you know, as your job, to kind of stepping into more of an administrative role or executive, you know, a role of management, basically?
Yeah, I'll be very honest about it. I did have immediate aspirations even before I returned. I sort of had my sights set on VAM, on the academy. And I thought like, wow, you know, this is an amazing institution and it has achieved so much. But I also had this sort of latent suspicion that it could be so much more. Its impact on the community, the awareness of what it does and what it offers could be enlarged, could be expanded. I would say just on that note, you know, for a large bulk of the academy's history, it was kind of the only game in town. And so, you know, you would have people, students that would, you know, would travel from Washington State and from, you know, Fraser Valley and from some pretty serious commuting was involved in commitment. And then, you know, fortunately, Greater Vancouver municipalities, you've had some very good music schools that have popped up to that, you know, the particular communities involved. And so I felt like the academy needed to sort of redefine its purpose. So I was kind of compelled to explore that. So I was lucky that my predecessor, Gerald Gebrecht, who had done an incredible job, you know, sort of pastoring the organization for 37 years, you know, he was very generous in allowing me to kind of shadow him, and he would share his insights in terms of where he felt like the school needed to go. You know, so I felt like there was a bit of a grooming going on that I was privileged to benefit from.
Yeah, no, I like to hear that because I think of the Vancouver Academy of Music as an institution, and it should continue as such and grow as such. And how lucky are we that we have someone that's, you know, had the benefit of going to another country, lived in a couple of other places, and can bring the benefit of that experience back here. No one really likes change per se, but growth, I think, is something that we should all embrace, right? So yeah, even for me, it's been great to see what's been happening there.
That's great. Yeah. I would just, you know, to expand on your point, in my travels, you mentioned Japan. I had a really bustling career in Japan where I was managed by actually the same company that brought the Beatles to Japan for the first time. And so, and throughout Asia and mainland China and Korea. So, and everywhere I would go in Europe and what have you, I would always want to look at best practices and to see the differences in training methods, the differences in philosophies of, you know, using music education for the personal development of young people. So that's, I'm so delighted that that will be, God willing, that'll be my my sort of life journey to continue exploring this question.
Okay, Joseph. So yes, COVID's been hard for a lot of people, but tell me a little bit more about this campaign that you mentioned, or the 50th anniversary. What was affected?
Well, I mean, you know, the Spirit of 50 campaign, talk about timing, you know, to, we launched this campaign. It was over the 2019-2020 year, and we've had great success. Our goal is to raise $1 million so that we can create a new learning center, completely upgrade our second floor facilities. And, you know, we've raised about $800,000. So we're pretty close to the finish line. And then of course, COVID breaks out. And that just, of course, is a game changer in so many ways. So, you know, I'm hopeful that I'm very mindful of the impact that the pandemic has had on our faculty. You know, a lot of them are performing musicians. They've lost their incomes from that. And of course, the impact on VAM students and families in terms of their finances. But the fact is, you know, we're so close to the finish line of this really inspiring campaign that represents the last kind of unfinished portion of our 50,000 square foot building that desperately needs a renovation. So if any listeners are interested in helping to support in any way this campaign, there's a link below that would be much appreciated.
Yes, I will put a link in the podcast notes. What's the goal? Is it 800,000, I hear you say, or a million?
Yeah, so we've raised 800 and the goal is a million. So gap to goal is 200,000. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's, we will definitely get there, but it's a little bit more challenging now with just the impact also on our, you know, P&L with due to COVID.
I'm curious, is there a fund for the musicians right now who have lost, you know, some of their performing opportunities? I've interviewed some other people who have mentioned there's a fund for baristas, apparently, mm-hmm. coffee makers, coffee staff workers, because businesses have shut down or slowed down quite a bit. I'm just curious, something like that.
Well, actually, right at the outset of the pandemic, we created a faculty emergency relief fund to assist with faculty, as well as an emergency bursary fund for our students. I mean, it's been well documented that the federal government has spent, what, $240 billion on, you know, various efforts to help bridge people that have been, you know, really impeded financially through COVID. So I think a lot of arts organizations and performing arts organizations have tapped into those monies. But, you know, there's a lot of independent freelance musicians who fall between the cracks. And, you know, we have 135 faculty members at the school, and, you know, many of whom are play in the symphony, in the opera, teach at UBC. But we also have many faculty members who are the backbone of the freelance community, as it were, here in Vancouver. So it's, you know, it's our responsibility to do everything we can to help those musicians that maybe do not have the same kind of protections or representations that, say, some of the big arts organizations would assist with.
Yeah, that's good to know. We need to support the arts, support local, support the arts, support the community, right, overall. You've got a lot going on down there at the Vanier Point in Kits Park. And yeah, thank you for sharing your story and integrating it with, you know, the history of VAM and what VAM can offer the community. I'm so impressed. I've had the opportunity to live in a number of other places, not as many as some, but more than others. And I am always amazed of the music opportunities that we have here, you know, through BAM, through, I've interviewed the Vancouver Pops. I'm going to interview the Vancouver Music Women's Musical Society. We have all kinds of recital groups, early music. I mean, Vancouver is rife with music opportunities. And I'm so glad that people like yourself are helping to preserve that and continue it, you know. Long may it continue.
Well, thank you, Gloria, for being, you know, a champion of that and allowing us to share our story. So it's a real pleasure. Thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. It's great to talk with you today.
Wasn't it great to hear Joseph's personal story as a budding musician motivated by Smarties to the real Smartie that he is today? What an incredibly accomplished and energetic executive director to move VAM forward. I'm so impressed with what's offered at VAM itself, and impressed with the many talented teacher musicians that I personally know and their dedication to musical education in this corner of the world. Now, if only my children had stuck it out there a little bit longer. Oh well, never mind. I can enjoy all the public performances available as a member of this community. Do you play an instrument? Perhaps you did as a child and now you just bring your own kids to lessons. What about you? Do you have an inclination to try your hand at it again? Perhaps you appreciate jazz and you'd love to belt out some tunes with the saxophone. Perhaps you love classical music and would love to try your hand at the double bass. Now you know what's buzzing on down there in that big block of brutalist architecture. Check out all their programs and events online at vancouveracademyofmusic.com. This show was recorded a few months ago, but the Spirit of 50 campaign is still going on strong. Help them mark their 50th anniversary and be a champion for musical programming in Vancouver. You can find a link below in my show notes for donations. Let's end with a performance from the Kerner Piano Trio, the ensemble in residence at VAM, and it consists of three educators and musicians of international acclaim, Nicholas Wright, Amanda Chan, and Joseph Elworthy. Follow Glow Says Let's Talk Local at Apple or Spotify, and I'll talk to you soon.